The thing about doors is that they connect spaces that are divided, right? And so I mean, just from the perspective of experience, right? You're in the world and, you know, you get used to sort of the shape of your daily life, right? And when you try to change, you try to move to another space, there are sometimes constraints, right? Like you're trying to change your habits and the changes don't stick, or you're trying to figure out, where the magic is in your life, or how to meditate, or how to like start an exercise routine that like actually sticks, right? And so there are like, I mean doors in terms of like an approach, right? Like when you try to enter a new space, like you're like, oh, I'm gonna try to start meditating, or I'm going to start a new form of exercise, or I'm gonna start, playing a musical instrument, right? Where you've never done that before. You're gonna do something new. Right, I've found that it's really valuable to find an approach that like that introduces you to that new space. And it's like when you go through a door, you're in a new room, and now you're assessing the space, and you're looking around, you're kind of taking it in. If you entered the space via a different door, you'd see a different thing. So this is something. Rob Rubea, who's like a meditation teacher, I listened to a lot of his talks. He talks a lot about like fantasies of practice. It's like, what are the stories that we're telling ourselves about what we're doing when we meditate, what we're doing when we, when we seek liberation, right? We engage with the Dharma, right? And he has a point that I think is really critical, which is that the way that you approach a space or a practice shapes what you will experience in it. It shapes what is possible, right? It shapes where you will be able to go and where you will not be able to go. And different approaches have different effects, and they can constrain or open available space for exploration. And so I think it's really important to be conscious of our approach when we engage in some new practice or space, and to not overly identify with it, to be like, oh, I came in through this door, but like this might not be the right door for me, right? This might not be the best way for me to like try to get into shape, right? There might be like a better way to engage with the gym or with exercise, or like what are the myths that we're telling ourselves about exercise or meditation or magic, right? So that's one thing. Another thing though is that a door can be open or can be closed, right? And a closed door isn't always something that you can tell apart from a wall, right? And so when talking about magic, right? Like, so I grew up, my parents are scientists, right? And I was raised by, pretty secular scientists, Unitarians. My dad's an astronomer. My mom was an organic chemist, and then, stopped doing chemistry to raise me and my brother. Mm-hmm. And so science is where I'm from. Like, that's my home. And science is huge, and looking at it now from, a vantage on the outside, it seems really clear to me from a magical perspective that science is this incredibly sophisticated magical operation, right? That was invented by like philosophers, right? Like the rules of science are called philosophy of science. They were invented by philosophers. A lot of early modern scientists were also magicians, right? Like Newton was an alchemist. Kepler, probably paid his bills doing astrology, right? Like that split hadn't happened at one point. And when you look at how science works, to me, it feels like a giant banishing operation, right? It's banishing uncertainty, and it's building this like gigantic hyper sigil. Like Aidan Wachter calls the hyper sigil is this like it's a long form narrative magical working, which is like scientific publication, right? It's this densely, you know, internally referential web of, you know, long before like the web, the, you know, World Wide Web was invented, there was this web of like mutually citing scientific papers, right? And of course, the web was probably, its design was probably influenced
explicitly
by,
about that, yeah.
Right? Right? Because yeah. It was a scientist.
Yeah.
And so, like, science has intense rules about what are proper, like, things to consider with science and what are not, right? And it sort of pushes that science is about creating certainty, right? Or as close to certainty as we can make, right? So it's about banishing uncertainty, right? If you're like, if you're pipetting a row of test tubes and you like forget whether you've done a row or not, like it doesn't matter now because now you're not sure. Right. What you're making is not like, you know, samples that have the right stuff in them. What you're making is certainty about which samples have the right stuff in them. And if you don't know anymore because you spaced out, like you have let uncertainty into the scientific, you know, experiment. It's now contaminated. Right. So like I think a lot about like drug trials. Mm. Right. Where you have like, you know, the double blind protocol, where like you're trying to exclude the placebo effect, this like weird magical, you know, thing that shouldn't work, mm-hmm. right? And you're excluding it for like reasons that make good sense in the context of like public health and like drug discovery, right? Like your thing needs to be better than nothing, mm-hmm. right? So you need to measure what nothing accomplishes and then like diff your drug's performance against it. And there was this whole period where like people were seeing the placebo effect getting measurably stronger in the United States in like the 90s. And this was when, you know, pharmaceutical companies were trying to develop a lot of drugs that like had psychosomatic components, like not that they're treatments for imaginary diseases, but they're treatment for diseases that interact with mental state in ways. And so like, you know, you had a lot of like heartburn medication, right? He had a lot of like antidepressants, right? And the drug companies were like, oh, what's happening with the placebo effect getting stronger, right? And what was happening was there was a revolution in drug, direct-to-consumer drug advertisement, where people like suddenly they realized you can advertise pills on TV without having a long list of horrible side effects if you don't say what the pill is for, right? And so that's where you had like those ask your doctor about blah, blah, sec, right? And you're like, what is that? Like, don't know, but it drives demand, right? And that the first, you know, pharmaceutical, you know, company whose ad agency figured out this loophole in like advertisement regulation, like made piles of money. So these ads are everywhere. Vaguely, you know, advertising pills and their effectiveness at something to like, you know, a population of 300 million people, like saturating primetime television, like advertisement is a magical operation.
Advertising the idea that you can put something in your mouth and change reality, and really not being more specific than that.
Right. They're having this problem. Like they're trying to develop these drugs, but meanwhile they're boosting the placebo effect that they have to like clear that bar with their own advertisements, which is like amazing.
There is an obvious literary reference that I have to make at this point. I think because it connects both pills and doors, which mm-hmm. is Alice in Wonderland. Like the first sort of thought I had about doors is like as like a magical concept is right. that you don't in the spirit world, the reason why doors are such a compelling symbol in as like an initiation into the spirit world from the yeah. quote unquote normal world is that like is about expectations, right? In the regular world, you know it's on the other side of the door. It's another room. You open the door, you go into the room. But yeah. in the magical realm, you don't know what's on the other side of the door. You don't know like whether the room is going to be the same two times when you open the door, that sort of right. thing. And so it creates this barrier. And I'm reminded of a lot of the stuff you said at the beginning about the doors, about expectations, and also the rubber band thing about sort of fantasies of what's inside the door. Like the thing about the door is that if you don't know what's on the other side, you have to open the door and go through in order to get your expectations like reset with what's really yeah. in there. And
right for the door, you're too small for the door.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then, so then the Alice in Wonderland part is like, you might not fit through the door. You might find a door and not fit into it. You might have to nibble on something in order to change your perspective on the door, or you literally fit through it, or you know, go through the teeny door and then eat something inside to get big again once you get inside. So there are all kinds of initiations and alchemies involved in these kinds of transitions. Like you can't just walk down the hall. Like there's shrinking and growing and opening and closing that has to happen. It's a really interesting connection, I feel like, to like start talking about doors and end up talking about pills.
Right.
But both of them sort of represent the same kind of moment of like choice or decision or transformation.
Yes. Although a pill is a one-way transformation. Uh-huh. Really, whereas doors, like magical doors, can be one way, right? But like you're used to a door being something you can go back through if you need to, and that, you know, that's not always true.
You were talking about trials in the context of pharmaceuticals and science, like the science as the hypersigil. That principle, I think, applies pretty well across the board in all of these kinds of explorations of trying it and see, you know, so some people might say fuck around and find out. Other people might say like you cannot know without direct experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think the struggle for someone who lives inside of science, right, who lives inside of that circle of banishment, is finding the door.
Uh-huh.
Because it's hidden.
Yeah.
How do you get outside of this thing that you've lived inside your whole life? And not everybody, you know, not everybody does that. Like my experience is not universal at all.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people who are raised in the weirdness, and right. and it's not new to them. It's very new to me. There's another sense of doors though that I want to mention, which is that doors aren't only a thing that you go through. Stuff can come through it.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Right. And so I think another part of magic, a part of magic, is finding the door into magic, right? But there's another part of magic that involves doors, I think, which is leaving a door ajar, right? Leaving a door open. If you leave a door open and you turn your back to it, you can't hear something come through it, which means you don't know whether something's come through it or not, right? And that there's that ambiguity. I say magic is a window left open to let a pie cool. Like, I don't know if anybody does that outside of like children's books, but that image, you know, like the pie sitting there with the steam coming off of it. And like, maybe you come back and your pie is still there, or maybe it's gone, or maybe, you know, maybe a slice of it is gone, or maybe it's been swapped for like a fairy pie that like looks like your pie, but like you cut into it and birds come out, right? Like,
but even in the base case, like thermodynamics have taken place. Like the pie is not the same anymore.
Right. And someone outside might smell the pie.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's not, there are all these possibilities that are left open. I think a key approach, right, to engaging with magic is developing a comfort with ambiguity, right? Which is very counter to the scientific project. It's the scientific project is about eliminating ambiguity so that you can nail things down and figure out how things really are, which is incredibly powerful magic. It's a very powerful approach. It's so successful that people have forgotten that it's magic, right? And it has become its own thing. It's become science, right? But like that needing to nail stuff down is like an axiom, right? It's an unexamined assumption that this is necessary and desirable to do. And it's an approach. It's an approach to reality that a lot of us have forgotten is an approach. We've forgotten that we're looking through a lens and that that shapes what we will see. And, you know, to change your relationship, your habitual relationship with ambiguity, I think it's an approach to taking that lens off and maybe trying other ways of knowing the world.
We were talking about people not finding the door, which was definitely something I wanted to ask about. Some mm-hmm. people never find the door that you found out of the clean room that, you know, that yeah. you were in before. Something that I was thinking about though, in imagining that person's experience is this magical principle of like you like a perfectly ordinary door might lead you to a very strange place. You might walk right past the door that, you know, says this is the way out of the room and try another door. And then there you are. I think that what you might be saying, and tell me if this reflects back what you're getting at here, is like okay. the process of peeking through doors itself is like something to be trained, and that you can mistake like searching for the correct door to so that you can finally get out of the room for what is really more of a process of paying attention to all the myriad doors so that every door can be out of the room.
Yes. I mean, there is no right door, right? Right. There is no privileged view that is going to show you an underlying reality, because like there is reality, but there is no reality that is perceivable without engaging in perception. Right, and the way that that perception unfolds is going to change what you find. And there is no way things really are that is privileged over other ways that things are. It's a dependent arising, right? It's they are co-creating epiphenomena of each other, right? And so like. The thing that's powerful about approach, about taking, you know, approach seriously and taking doors seriously is, not every approach is going to work for you, right? You're very different. And the level that we're talking at is very close to you. It's in the part of the world that is less consensus, right, that is more specific to your perception and is going to have less in common with how somebody else sees the world. And so like an approach that works for me may just not work for you at all, right? Because of how you work and how your world, you know, how your immediate surroundings are, your context, all of our context is different, right? So how do we talk about something that's that close to us in a way that's like portable to another person's experience, right? Portable, nice. Right? Like, how do you point out? You can say like, here is a door, here was my experience going through this door, you can check it out. And like, it might not click for you, right? But when you're trying to enter a new space, a new practice, what you want to get to is you want to get to that point where it starts to like auto-catalyze, where it like clicks. And like, your engagement in whatever it is, whether it's like, going to the gym or meditation or practicing magic, right, is it starts to sustain itself. Part of the way that you engage in magic is through the imagination, right? Because magic tends to hide in plausibly deniable places in the scientific landscape, right? It tends to manifest in places that it can be dismissed, right? And so I think of that less as plausible deniability than like a plausible, like, affirmability, right? It can be plausibly affirmed to be this thing. But you don't have to force it to lie flat. You don't have to decide whether it's magic or not. Because eventually you'll get to a place where it tells you. When you're a new magician, when you're a beginner, and then a thing happens, and you're like, okay, I could do all these like elaborate backflips to like explain away this result, but I'm not going to. Right? I'm going to leave that door open.